Now, a new report finds that the Midwest plays a more significant role in the country's economy than a lot of people might have thought. Our guests examine how the industries, politics, and culture of the Midwest affects its economic growth, and he says Midwestern cities are at the heart of the story. Adam Roberts is the Midwest correspondent for The Economist, covering politics, policy, and social affairs in America. He wrote a special report on the Midwest for The Economist. Adam, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be with you.
I want to start with this number that kind of surprised me. If you stack up the Midwest as its own country and our economic output, we compare pretty favorably to a lot of just whole-on countries. Where do we fit in on the global stage?
Yeah, I think the Midwest packs a much bigger punch than many people realize. So if you just add up the population of the states of the Midwest, the 12 states that I count as the Midwest, you've got around 68 million people. That's the same population as the entire population of the UK or of France. And if you look at the economy of the Midwest, that's about $4 trillion. That's the fourth biggest economy on the planet. That's as big as Germany's economy. So I think we forget that sometimes. We think the Midwest is this declining region. Actually, it packs a pretty big punch.
And you point out at the outset of your big piece on the Midwest how central the region has been to American politics and culture lately. Can you spell out some of the big moments here?
Absolutely. So I've been in the Midwest for a couple of years, and I really wanted to come here. I wanted to be based in Chicago and to report from the heartland of America, because the punch that the Midwest packs when it comes to politics is just immense. If you look at which parts of America you have swing voters, where people who maybe backed Barack Obama then went to back Donald Trump, a lot of those are in the Midwest. States like Wisconsin were absolutely crucial in getting Donald Trump elected in 2016. The same states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, will also be really important in 2020. So when it comes to electoral politics, it's this bit of America that really has a greater impact, because that's where the swing voters are. And then in other ways, you look at social change, social disruption. We had the example from Minneapolis just a couple of months ago, the murder of George Floyd, and the complications that blew up from that, the protests and the effect that had on cities around the Midwest, around America, and then around the world. So I think the Midwest really does have a big influence on the rest of America and the rest of the world.
When people look in at the Midwest from the outside, I think, and you make this point, a lot of people think farmland and Rust Belt declining cities. Is that the stereotype still of the Midwest from the outside? We know it's wrong, and we'll talk about that, but is that how people still think of us?
I think it is, sadly. I think people have this phrase, flyover country, or this bit of America that you don't really want to go to see because it's between the coasts. And so the rest of the world doesn't really understand quite how much strength and opportunity and rejuvenation there is in the Midwest. I think there's a lot of prejudice that, as you just said, it's a place of farmers and sort of inward-looking people. And I found the complete opposite on my travels around the Midwest for the last couple of years.
Talking to Adam Roberts from The Economist, talking about a big piece he wrote about the economic and political future of the Midwestern United States. Adam, a key theme running through a lot of your writing on this is the role of cities. And you say for the region, for states, a lot of their future lives or dies by the success of their cities, even for the people who don't live in the cities themselves. Can you expand on that some?
Yeah, sure. So if you take a typical Midwestern state, and I'll take Illinois because that's one I know well because I live in Chicago, and you ask how much of the state's GDP, the gross state product, comes from the city versus from the rural areas, and you find that Chicago accounts for 80, 85, even higher proportions of the wealth that the state creates. In Wisconsin, a huge amount comes from Madison and Milwaukee. I think although we talk about the Midwest as having a lot of farmers, a lot of rural economy, in fact, just like the rest of America, it's the metro regions that create the most wealth. And a lot of the subsidies that then go to farmers come from those urban areas. And in the long run, it's the success, it's the health of those big cities that will decide how successful the Midwest as a whole will be.
There's a sense here in Wisconsin, and we've got a researcher named Kathy Kramer who researches this kind of thing a lot. You talk about some of the things in Illinois, this sense that those metropolitan areas and the rural areas, they're not the same state. They're not in this together. Can you talk about the challenge that can pose?
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned Kathy Kramer. I think she's done some really important, really helpful research to spell this out. But as she says, the way that people in Madison or Milwaukee might see politics, see the future of their states, their attitudes, for example, on whether to welcome immigration, what sort of healthcare policy you want, can be so different, 180 degrees different from the views of people in small town, rural areas. And that split in terms of social values. Chicago, for example, has an African-American lesbian mayor. The people of Chicago are very happy with that, very relaxed about that. But you get out of the city into the small towns and you talk to people about the values that people have. And then they're a little bit more, what should I say, old-fashioned, a little bit less welcoming to progressive ideas, whether it's in politics or social life. So there's a very stark division between urban values and rural values.
Let's talk about a tale of two different types of cities. And this is something you do a lot in your piece, comparing and contrasting cities that have emerged from that sort of Rust Belt scenarios and ones that haven't. Do you see common themes in what works and what helps a city bounce back from, you know, the loss of that industrial base of the, you know, 50s and 60s?
Yeah. So, of course, my prejudice when I came to the Midwest a few years ago was, oh, I knew about Detroit and the collapse of its population. I'd heard about Rust Belt cities and how they were struggling to get on when factories closed and, you know, factory jobs disappeared. And as I traveled around the region and I went to all sorts of cities, I saw that some cities were learning to thrive again. They were finding, if not a magic formula, then at least some common approaches to help themselves thrive. And I looked at small places, relatively small ones like Ann Arbor in Michigan, Des Moines in Iowa. Maybe Madison doesn't count as a huge city, but it's a very successful one in Wisconsin. And I saw that the ones that work had a few things in common. And this often came down to getting their downtown areas to thrive again so that people wanted to come and play and go to restaurants and live there again. Then they were often cities that had a good university or a good healthcare system that would create very highly paid and high-skilled jobs. And then there were some that were good at developing industry and going into advanced manufacturing, not just doing the old-fashioned low-skill manufacturing. And generally, cities that decided to save themselves, to tap into their own social capital, not hope that the federal government or some outsiders would come and rescue them, the ones who took it upon themselves to turn their fortunes around, they did the best. So somewhere like Grand Rapids in Michigan also did very well. Pittsburgh is a great example. Chicago's downtown is a great example of places that have learned to thrive again. And I think we can look across the region and see lots of reasons to hope, but it doesn't mean that every place can succeed.
You also compare and contrast two approaches. One, give a lot of money, give a lot of tax incentives to try to bring in big employers, versus two, do the thing you were kind of just talking about, build up your social infrastructure, make it a nice place to live, and then use that to lure the business. How do you see those two approaches panning out?
Well, exactly. So I took an example from Wisconsin, the Foxconn investment that was much trumpeted. If you remember, about 3 or 4 years ago, Donald Trump came to Racine and trumpeted the Foxconn investment to build a huge factory to produce screens, that this was going to be the future of manufacturing. And as you well know, and your listeners know, there were all sorts of very generous subsidies promised to Foxconn to develop that industrial project down in southern Wisconsin. And to my mind, it hasn't been a great success. They haven't really got up and running yet. Whereas in contrast, you look at somewhere like Grand Rapids in Michigan, and it took the approach that it would take 20 or 30 years of creating a really attractive environment so that the existing manufacturers would stay, and gradually you can persuade other ones to come in. And I think that the Grand Rapids model is a much more successful one than the Racine model.
Adam Roberts is with us, Midwest correspondent for The Economist. We're talking to him about a new report he wrote that lays out the economic diversity and potential growth of the Midwest. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What economic changes have you seen in the last few years in your own part of the Midwest, whether that's big city, small town, or somewhere in between? Are you hopeful about the future of Midwestern cities? Do you think that we could overcome divides in the Midwest between whether that's cities and the country, overcoming racial divides, which we'll get into in a few moments. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 with your thoughts or questions for our guest. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our conversation about what Midwestern cities could teach us about economic recovery and the role of the Midwest in the national and even global economy, and how politics, culture, academic institutions, and manufacturing all contribute to the potential for growth in states like Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Did you move to Wisconsin from outside the Midwest? What drew you here? Were there stereotypes about the Midwest that you found out were wrong or right? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to our callers now. Mike is with us in Appleton. Mike, hello.
Hi there, guys. How's it going today?
Good. What'd you want to bring up, Mike?
Wanted to say, you were kind of looking for unique examples within the Midwest and how one can make their economy grow. I am actually a graduate of Northern Michigan University and lived in the Marquette, Michigan area between college and post-collegiate life for about 15 years. Since recently moved back down to Wisconsin, but in that time I've seen, you know, the greater Marquette region, because of, you know, the advent of faster internet and everything like that, people can telecommute in positions, and really there's a lot of high-paying jobs here between the university, the healthcare system, and the fact that people of wealth can actually just stay in a very nice little home there and still conduct business. And that has allowed for the local economy to really branch out for especially leisure products. Like, you see a lot of longboards, a lot of mountain bike, things along the lines of that, snowboarding, of course.
Mike, I'm going to jump in because we don't have a ton of time. You gave us a lot to work with. Let's go to our guest now, Adam Roberts from The Economist. Adam, there's that education, medical, and quality of life bundle that Mike is talking about there.
That's absolutely right. And I think he touches on something that is a real strength of the Midwest, which is maybe even more so with COVID-19 and uncertainty about what's happening to our economy in 2020 and 2021, maybe people would rather not live in the biggest cities. Maybe they want to come to somewhere in the Midwest where they can have a higher quality of life. They don't have to pay so much for accommodation. And they can, as long as there's, as Mike says, a good internet connection, they can do a lot of work and a lot of getting by that they used to do in the big cities from smaller places. So there may just be an advantage in the Midwest as we go through this very difficult period with COVID-19.
Mike, thanks a lot for that call. We'll go to Laura now in Wisconsin Rapids. Laura, hi.
Hi. I just was wondering if, well, I worked for the Consolidated Papers, our local paper company, for 19 and a half years. When they closed, they were Stora Enso. And since then, they've sold out, every single mill was sold to different companies. And the last paper mill in central Wisconsin, owned by Consolidated Papers, just shut down July 31st. And that's like 915 workers that are now out of a job. And we have a new water park and a new mayor. And I'm just wondering, what can we do with an empty paper company, paper mill, and 915 people out of work?
Laura, thank you so much. I'm sorry for what your community is going through right now. Adam, are there thoughts there? This is not, factories closed 20 years ago. How do we recover? This is a story happening in real time now. Do you have thoughts on how a community can recover that from that?
Yeah, but, well, first of all, I'm really sorry that happened, and it must be a huge shock and terrible for everyone involved. If there's one very broad lesson for all places that might be hit by something like this, it's that the more educated your workforce is, the higher the level of education that people get, the more resilient they are, the more likely they can move from working in one industry to working in another. And so the advantage that states like Wisconsin, but also Minnesota, Illinois, the ones at the western end of the Midwest, their advantage is that they've invested more in education over the years. So on balance, more educated people have a chance to look for new sorts of work. I don't have any great insights into that particular industry, but in general, education helps a lot.
Thanks a lot for that call. One issue that you get into in your piece, Adam, I don't want to overlook it, is the challenge of racial disparities and segregation. You write that in communities like Milwaukee, we know, and others in the Midwest, we have lasting segregation more so than most of the other country.
The rest of the country, yeah. So Milwaukee ranks as the most segregated city in America, the most racially segregated of all. I think one of the big problems for cities in the Midwest is if you're not growing fast, if you're not expanding your population, if you're not expanding your footprint and getting more resources, then it's harder to deal with segregation. It's harder to build new schools or to put up new housing that can help to unpick those barriers that are always still there. And I think in a way, one of the ways to tackle the problems of segregation quicker is to find ways to be more economically resilient and how to grow faster, because that gives you the resources to take on that social challenge. But we've seen with what happened in Minneapolis and anger about the police that there are also policy changes that can be made to try to reduce the tension that can often exist between African-Americans and the police that is so pervasive in the Midwest and elsewhere.
Talking to Adam Roberts, Midwest correspondent for The Economist, about a big piece he wrote on the Midwest, its economic present and potential for the future. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Joe is with us in Star Lake. Joe, hello.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. My question is, how big a factor is this huge resource of fresh water of the Great Lakes to the survival and or the growth of the Midwest, and how they're working that out with Canada's claims on that water?
Joe, thanks for the call. A big, long-running issue, the Great Lakes Compact. But, Adam, the Great Lakes as potentially an economic driver now and in the future.
I think it's a huge resource for some areas. So I don't imagine that you can take the fresh water from the Great Lakes and export it somewhere else. I think that's not an option. But for the city of Milwaukee, that's made a real emphasis on developing the blue economy, creating companies that will develop technology that can be exported to countries like India or to the Middle East, where you can learn to use water in a much more efficient way to capture water. I know that Wisconsin has many, many companies that have really developed expertise that is going to be useful for the Chinese, for Indians and other parts of the world to tap into. I think that's where you can specialize in that resource. I don't know about Canada. I don't think that Canada is likely to steal any water from the Great Lakes, because you do have this cooperation over the border. But for Milwaukee to push on with the blue economy sounds very sensible to me.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. I want to dive into something we've touched on already a little bit, Adam, the role of universities and schools and education. It's nice if you have one already, but if you're in a community having tough economic times without that, it's hard to start a new university from scratch. How can we harness that power, though, for the region as a whole?
Yeah, you're right. So it's not that everyone can just suddenly create a wonderful university like the University of Wisconsin at Madison. Of course, for the cities that have it, that's great, and you can do more with your university. You can create new companies. You can encourage entrepreneurs from those universities to move into new areas. Pittsburgh is a great model of this, moving into robotics and artificial intelligence that can then create jobs for other people to take advantage of. But for those cities that don't have a university, you can look to other forms of vocational education, how to get people the skills that companies really want to have. And I heard some great examples, for example, from Ohio, Columbus, Ohio, of developing the sort of vocational apprenticeships that Germany is very good at doing, that more and more cities in the Midwest are learning to do. So you get companies involved in helping to do the education as well. And then they get the sort of workers they need to work in advanced manufacturing, the sort of high-skilled vocational education. That's just as valuable in many ways as a four-year degree.
I wanted to talk to you, Adam, about cooperation versus competition. We've had in various states in the Midwest sort of economic border wars, like Wisconsin and Illinois trying to poach businesses or putting up ads to try to lure people to move from Chicago to Wisconsin. Is there a potential for cooperation that could benefit the region as a whole?
I think there is potential for cooperation. For example, you see this with transport infrastructure, or with the fact that cities as a whole, they spill over state borders. So Chicago is such a big economy that it will affect what happens in southern Wisconsin. So there's not a lot of the states competing really hard with each other, definitely not by offering subsidies to try to lure Amazon or Foxconn or someone into the state. It makes a lot more sense for the states to get together, to look at what resources they have in common. And for example, with those transport links, to try to lower the cost of doing business because you have good rail connections or good road connections. Some people even talk about building a Hyperloop system to link the big cities of the Midwest together. So I think there's a lot of scope for better cooperation.
In our last minute, Adam, what are you watching for most? What pulse, what indicator do you watch for when it comes to the future of the well-being of the region?
Well, I think right now we have to look at what's happening with this pandemic. It's overwhelmingly the important issue for whether schools can reopen, whether businesses can work again. And so keeping the pandemic in a box, try to suppress the pandemic, that's the first thing. In the really long term, I would look at education as the key indicator. Can you get more people to have a higher level of education beyond the high school degree up into a higher education? That's where prosperity comes in the long run. That's the 50, 60 year timeline you can be looking for.
Adam, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
We've been talking to Adam Roberts, Midwest correspondent for The Economist. He talked to us about a recent report he wrote that explored the outsized economic impact of the Midwest and possible roads for the region's future.